This is the last week of our six-part series that we're calling The Chosen. As we've been saying, you and I make a lot of choices every day, don't we? We make a lot of choices every day, but God has actually made the most important choice of your life already. He has chosen you. God has chosen you to accomplish His goals. You have been set apart for His purposes. And consequently, your life is not completely your own. And if you fully accept that decision, if you choose God back, then you will inevitably try to live in a different way than most other people. And over the course of this series, we've talked about five ways that your life might be different if you accept the fact that God has chosen you. For example, we said in the first week that if you choose to live according to God's plan for your life, you will see yourself primarily as an agent of God's love, and you will work to make that love known in the world every day. You'll also try to obey God when God asks you to do something specific for Him, something hard, something important, something self-sacrificial. If you choose God as He has chosen you, we also said that you'll become more deeply involved in a community of believers who try to live according to the unconventional values of Christ, things that go against the grain of this world. And we said that you'll do everything in your power to love the people around you and act righteously towards them, even when you're tempted to be angry or selfish. And then lastly, we said, if you accept the fact that God has chosen you, you will try to extend yourself beyond your own comfort zone, your own community of friends, and you'll go out into the world and do something great, add value to it. Jesus talked about that as being salt and light for the world. This is what we've talked about up to this point in the series. And if you're new here or you haven't seen all the messages, you can catch them all, watch them all on our website, sthillary.org. But this week, today, is the final message of our series. And it is the master class of those chosen to be God's own. It will be the pinnacle of our learning and the hardest lesson of all. What to do when someone attacks you and tries to hurt you. Many of you, if you've been around the campus for a while, you've met my furry little friend there you see on the screen. Her name is Gracie. She's not my dog, but she's like my dog. I run her several times a week. I pick her up at her house. I run her through the neighborhood. She comes over sometimes, occasionally for sleepovers, and she's a good friend of mine, Gracie. But a few weeks ago, we had to stop running, and we had to take a break because Gracie was attacked in her own backyard by a pack of coyotes. Don't worry, she survived. She survived, but had to have emergency surgery. Here's some pictures of her wounds. They're pretty gruesome. She's fine now, and we're back on the road again, but I have to tell you, I was so angry that I vowed to exterminate every coyote in the county single-handedly. I had no idea how I was going to do that, since I'm not exactly the type to capture or kill a wild animal, but that was my emotional reaction. Search all those coyotes out and destroy them. Destroy them for what they did to my Gracie. I even told one friend that if I saw a coyote in the street, I would neither break nor swerve. And if I happened to hit the thing, I would yell out my window, "That's for Gracie." But that is our inclination, isn't it? When it comes to anything that threatens us or our loved ones, our first instinct is to destroy it. That's the theme of one of my favorite Disney movies. If you know me, you know I love movies, and I particularly love Disney movies, and I'm not above watching princess movies. I'm comfortable in that. My favorite one of those is Beauty and the Beast. The movie, as you probably know, it's wildly popular, but as you probably know, it's about a beautiful but bookish girl named Belle who lived in a small French village with her father, Maurice. Belle had to repeatedly rebuff the unwanted advances of a Neanderthal hunter named Gaston. He was a narcissist, and she just liked her books anyway. One day, her father, Maurice, got lost in the woods on his way to a local fair, and he stopped at a castle for refuge to kind of take a break and find his way again. The castle was occupied by a prince who years earlier had been transformed by an enchantress into a hideous-looking beast. She did that because the prince was selfish at heart. Now, when Maurice's carriage returned to the village without him, Belle became worried. And so she went out and she found him eventually in the dungeon of the beast's castle. The beast agreed to free Maurice if Belle would take his place and become the beast's prisoner. Over her father's objections, Belle agreed. And then Maurice rushed back to the village for help, but he was nearly locked up as a lunatic. Well, one thing led to another, and Gaston, Belle's would-be beau, ends up leading an angry mob with pitchforks and torches to the beast's castle. They have only one desire, and all the way to the castle, the villagers chant these words. Do you remember what they are? Kill the beast. Kill the beast. Over and over again, they chanted that. It is our deeply ingrained human nature. It is deeply ingrained in our human nature to want to get back and to get even. When a coworker steals your ideas, you just want to get even, right? When someone trash talks you, the urge is to respond in kind. When someone cuts you off in traffic, you want to tailgate and follow them for miles, right? Making all kinds of angry hand gestures in the process. When a neighbor threatens to haul you into court, the impulse is to countersue and take him to court first, or at least egg his house. When someone criticizes you on social media, you just want to start a flame war. When criminal activity in your area is on the rise, it's tempting to purchase a firearm, right? When it comes to threats and criticisms and attacks, we all want to kill the beast. But in Jesus' master class today, in the gospel, he teaches something very, very different. He says to his chosen ones, you have heard it said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I say to you, offer no resistance to one who is evil. In those days, you could legally demand retribution for injuries caused by someone else. It was the law of retaliation. But Jesus challenges the right to exact revenge. He calls his disciples to resist the temptation to get back and get even. Then he says, when someone strikes you on your right cheek, turn the other one to him as well. Think about this for just a moment. Do the geometry with me. A blow on the right cheek from a right-handed person, right? Most people are right-handed, so if you're going to strike someone on their right cheek, you would have to do it with the back of your hand, right? Now, in those days and in that culture, a backhanded slap was considered a terrible insult because you would only strike someone of a lower social status with the back of your hand. If it was someone of equal social status, you would, I guess they slapped a lot back then, that you would slap them with the open palm of your hand. Anyway, a backhanded slap would require double the penalty. But Jesus challenges his followers not only to give up that financial compensation, but also to endure further insult. Then Jesus goes on. He says, if anyone wants to go to law with you over your tunic, hand him your cloak as well. What's he talking about? Well, back then, if you were a creditor, if someone owed you money, you could sue that person for their tunic. The tunic was the inner garment that Jewish men typically wore. Why you would want that? No idea. But anyway, what you could not be sued for was your outer garment, your cloak, your coat, because it kept you warm, and that would be inhumane to have to give that up. But Jesus challenges those who choose to follow him to voluntarily give up their cloak as well. And then finally he says, should anyone press you into service for 1 mile, go with him for 2 miles. Back then, a Roman soldier could force someone to carry his armor and other equipment for up to 1 mile, but no further. And although the Romans were hated by the Jews for occupying their land, Jesus calls his disciples to be willing to go for 2 miles, not just one. Think about this. Someone who strikes you and sues you and forces you to do something against your will is definitely your enemy. But look at what Jesus says. Love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. You know, it's one thing to try to be a holy person. It's one thing to be the bearer of God's love when you're not in the center of a conflict. It's easy to be righteous and do the right thing when you're not being attacked. Loving your neighbor comes easy or comes naturally when your neighbor is polite and minds his own business. Being part of a community like a church makes you feel included when you're not the subject of gossip. It's fulfilling to do what God asks of you when people are grateful for your work. In those cases, being holy is rewarding. But it's quite another thing to do those good things when you feel threatened and under attack. The question, of course, is how? How do you respond with love rather than revenge? How do you forgive instead of carrying around resentment and grudges? How do you offer blessings to someone who attacks you instead of curses? Well, it may seem childish, but let's go back to Beauty and the Beast for a minute. After all, it is a tale as old as time, so maybe there's some timeless truth in there. At one point in the story, Belle and the Beast fall in love. And the turning point seems to be when Belle gets attacked by wolves out in the forest, and the Beast rescues her and he gets hurt in the process. They go back to the castle and Belle nurses his wounds. And it's because that he rescued her that Belle is able to begin to see a hidden goodness buried beneath the Beast's unpleasant appearance. Before he was changed into a beast, he was a narcissistic, selfish prince. And his outward appearance as a beast simply revealed the truth about who he was on the inside. But despite all that, Belle could see something good underneath all of that. You know, I think people do selfish things and they hurt other people because the goodness with which God created them originally has become damaged over time through bad choices. I've made many of them. But I also think that the key to loving selfish and difficult people is trying to see beneath the surface and recognize that original goodness with which God created that person. And that requires us to set aside our initial instinct to get revenge. I want to give you a good example of that, a story that happened about 20 years ago. In the early morning hours of May 31st, 1999, two college students at Franciscan University in Steubenville, Ohio, were kidnapped. They were taken to a remote area and shot. It was Rachel Muha's worst nightmare when a few days later, on Friday, June 4th, the police called her and confirmed that her son, Brian, was in fact dead. Within 24 hours, the police had arrested two suspects. The motive for the murders, as it turned out, was a car, making the killings all the more senseless. In shock over the murders, students at Franciscan University packed the chapel on campus. And from the lectern, Brian's mother uttered two inconceivable words. She said, "I forgive." When she learned later of the brutality of the murders, she continued to forgive the perpetrators. When they bragged in prison about what they had done, she still forgave them, and even went to the district attorney's office and asked him not to seek the death penalty. In court, Rachel spoke to the two perpetrators, both of whom were 18 years old. And she said something remarkable. She said this: "After this life, each of us will go to heaven or hell. As long as you are on this earth, you can choose. Choose heaven. I'm praying for you. God bless you." How could she say that? How could she forgive and say something like that? Well, I think it's because Rachel could see some hidden goodness in those two boys. Otherwise, why would she say, "You could still go to heaven, and I'm praying for you"? She began to see with the eyes of God, and she must have seen some redeeming value in those two boys convicted of murder. I often imagine what I would do if I were to actually pass a coyote on one of the roads here in Tiburon. I wonder whether, instead of taking revenge as I have sworn, I might actually be given the grace to look long and hard into that predator's eyes and somehow see a beloved creature of God just trying to survive in this world. I still don't know whether I would pass up that opportunity, but I do pray every day for the strength to follow the advice of Jesus, not just with respect to coyotes, but to everybody, to love our enemies. Maybe this week you could reflect on a time in your life when you felt wronged or violated or judged or mistreated, and then pray for that person who made you feel those things. And maybe you could even see some goodness in that person and forgive them. It would be a great thing, wouldn't it, if you could do that? Because you are chosen. As Christ says in the final line of the gospel, you are chosen to be perfect, just as your heavenly Father is perfect.